Welcome to the Golf Industry Uncut. On-demand audio for the world of golf like never before. Exclusively on THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Network. Now, here's your host, JB.
Welcome to THP Radio. I'm your host, JB, and today we have a new episode of the Golf Industry Uncut. Uncut is your chance to go behind the scenes of the golf industry and get the inside scoop on the people that make the equipment you love. This week, we have Dean Snell from Snell Golf on the show. Dean, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
We're going to jump right into it because your history in the golf ball business that people have seen in our THP TV spots or learned at our THP event, pretty iconic from a product standpoint. You've been with two of the largest manufacturers and then launched Snell Golf. The biggest question is why did you launch Snell Golf?
Well, like you mentioned, I was very fortunate to work with two of the best, the biggest and best companies in golf and learn a lot. So one of the things that I noticed that was happening in golf is it was really, really hurting. A lot of golf courses closing, memberships down, people leaving the game, and it's expensive. It's an expensive sport. So if there was something after the 25-plus years or so that I worked with these major companies, working with tour players and developing golf balls for the best players in the world, if we could find a way to bring that technology, that performance that these guys get for free, bring that to the average golfer to try to make it affordable for them. So if we can get the best performance we can get and we can give it to people at an affordable price, you know, maybe that'll help their game a little bit and make them want to play more, have a little more money in their pocket at the end of the day, or maybe play twice instead of once, or, you know, maybe
the 19th
buy a
hole.
Couple extra beers. Yeah, a couple extra beers on the 19th hole never hurts either.
You have two golf balls in the line, the Get Some and the My Tour ball, and we'll refer to that as the MTB ball. I'm going to focus on that design right now. What makes it unique to other designs you've done over the years? Did you collectively take what you've learned, or is it, hey, I know how to do this and I can do it for less money?
Definitely not for less money. It's definitely the cost to make the golf balls are the same cost if you wanted to make a, you know, a Pro V1 or a TaylorMade urethane golf ball. Those costs are the same. So there's no corners cut on that side to it. But being involved in the golf business for 25 years and pretty much every patent that's ever been written, I think I've read, which I don't encourage anybody to ever try. But it's learning and understanding some of those technologies and knowing what works in the past and what hasn't worked in the past, being able to take a best core technology, a best mantle technology, and the best cover technology and putting them together into one type of golf ball is, you know, is that's the history and the understanding that I have from the past. So I've been able to do that and then create, you know, very high level performance, tour type performance. The cost to make them are the same, but all the added costs that go into big tour contracts and big marketing expenses and big overheads and R&D, all of those costs that the other companies have, I don't have those, so I pass that savings back. So there's no cut in performance, there's no cut in cost. There's a huge benefit in the performance side to it, and there's a huge benefit in the affordability side when you have to buy them.
Now, that brings up an interesting question that I have, and maybe our listeners will find interesting, is let's take a core set of golf balls. Is the cost higher if you add up marketing, tour player sponsorship, packaging, and everything else, or is the cost higher in the actual golf ball to bring it to the regular cost?
Yeah, it's no question. The cost to produce the golf balls are very similar. So what happens in manufacturing is a lot of that's volume driven. So if your volume can be higher, maybe your manufacturing cost can be lower, and that's slightly lower. The big incremental costs come from the tour contracts. When, you know, in our model that we use, it's direct to consumer. So we sell direct to you online. You go to our website at snellgolf.com, you put an order in, we ship it to your home the next day with free shipping. That's a different model than having sales reps call on PGA golf courses and being in a lot of big retail places and having sales reps sell and paying them a salary and then paying the margin cuts to the retailers so they can make money. So all of that cost, plus the tour contracts, having someone out on tour, having a big R&D staff, having a big marketing staff, doing TV ads and all those big things that cost money, which is the model, the sales reps, and which is the model that the Titleist, TaylorMade, Callaway, Bridgestone have, it works for them. for us, we take all those big costs out and take the cost to make the golf ball, you know, have a margin added to it, and then the other margins that they have to, the expenses that they have to add to it, we pass that back to the consumer.
Now I'm going to ask a follow-up question to that that you will know and very few people outside of you would know. A number of years ago, the top, let's say 50 players were sponsored. And I'll use golf ball as an example. The top 50 guys had a golf ball sponsorship. Maybe some had a, you know, play-in money. And for those that are following that don't know that, it means if you put this in play, you get paid. It's not a you have to play it kind of deal. When did it change to where every single guy on tour had a golf ball contract?
It changed, you know, I'm trying to think. It would have been probably in the 1995, 96 range is when the tee-up side started to come up. So they have tee-up performance contracts that if you played certain equipment in that week, you'd get paid a certain amount of money. A lot of those came with win clauses and bonuses. So, and a lot of them came with yearly points. So if you won yearly points and you won. So it was a different model. I think when in the golf business, I think you started to see contracts come into tour players when other companies started to bring equipment that was good. So when TaylorMade and Callaway and Bridgestone, you know, and even Nike had quite a few products, when those companies started to develop good products and was a choice for tour players, then you started to see a lot of the contracts become, you know, okay, you got a club and ball contract, now you're a full staff player. Whereas in the past, if you were a Titleist golf ball player, you might play, you know, Callaway club, and so you'd have different contracts with different companies. So I think what ends up happening is that once the equipment became good from all companies and everybody had a full package to offer tour players, that's when you started seeing these full contracts come in. And then some people would have ball shoe glove contracts. You know, some people would have driver ball contracts. So they were able to start to put packages together for players to try to sign players because the equipment was good.
There's no denying that the golf ball revenue model for golf equipment companies is a gigantic one, and everybody wants a piece of that pie. So it's important to pay as many people as you can to play it, because that title of most used on tour or most used here or most sold here is important.
That's correct. I mean, and that's part of their business model. So, and they pay a lot of money for it. You know, that's a big part of the TaylorMade and Callaway driver thing, and a huge part of the Titleist golf ball side. So holding on to the number one ball or the number one iron or number one club, a driver, a rescue, or whatever, that's a big part of their marketing campaigns, and they spend a lot of money to do that. Now, when you have that kind of model in your business plan and you pay that kind of money, someone has to pay that, you know, and that typically usually comes back to the consumers. So we had 5 tour players last year call us to play the ball on tour, wanted a pretty modest contract with us, and said we'll get 10 more. You know, and it adds up to millions of dollars that we would have to pay. If we have to pay that cost has to get transferred down. So our goal was to say, hey, we respectfully decline. We'll supply balls to you if you need them, but we're not going to have any tour contracts and get into that part of the game. That's their part. Our part is to try to deliver the best performance you can get that they have, but keep it affordable for the people that actually buy the golf balls.
Was there any part of you that said, wait, this might be bigger than I thought, and all of a sudden become, you know, a global giant with the signing of tour players and everything else? Or were you adamant about staying out of that world?
Yeah, I'm pretty adamant about staying out of that world. You know, we're a pretty small company, and it's fun, you know, and we enjoy it. And, you know, if you get too big too fast, you can be out of business. So we try to control a lot of the stuff that we're doing here to make sure that the inventory levels we have support the plans that we have. And, you know, last year we grew 400%. You know, 10% growth is very good. 400% is crazy. So we struggled really to keep up with that growth and make plans for this year to continue to grow and move forward. So I'm okay with it. You know, I think there's a place. I'm not against the PGA system or against the Titleist, the TaylorMade system. I think it works for them. You know, and I think there's another model that can work for other people as well. Not everybody wants to pay $50, $60, or $45, or $55 for a dozen golf balls. You know, if they can get them at the performance that we can deliver, but make it affordable, you know, that's money in their pocket, and that will maybe help keep people playing. When Titleist and TaylorMade have their model to continue the tour and help grow the game that way, so I think both could survive, and we're comfortable with where we're at.
buzzwords play a pretty large role in golf. For years with the golf ball, it was long, it was spin. Now it's really been soft. Is it that technology catches on with everybody, so they jump in to make what buzzwords happen, or is it an innovation somewhere along the line that, wow, this works, so then everybody just follows suit? You know, soft came out of, I wouldn't say it came out of nowhere, because there were a couple of brands that worked with compression, and you've worked with compression for a number of years. What makes the buzzword just catch on, and is soft here to stay?
You know, it's actually an interesting thing. When I started in golf, which was back in 1990, Tour Bilotto.
You're going to date yourself here.
That's all right. I'm old, and the gray kind of dates it anyway, so I'm okay with that. But the Tour Bilotto golf ball was the dominant golf ball out there. And even though it said 90 and 100 compression on the ball, it was really in the mid-70s. And it was a very soft golf ball. So what ended up happening is when you went from a, you know, if we were to put 80 compression on the ball back then, it would have, you know, that's what the ladies' balls were. So it was always kept at 90 and 100. So a little deceiving, but it is what it is. What happened is that, you know, now it went to the Titleist Professional, which got a little firmer, but it chased distance. And then it went to the Pro V1 construction, which chased more distance. And it went to the HX Tour, the HX Black, the B330. So these golf balls got firmer and firmer and firmer, but they all kept chasing distance. So distance was the main focus for everybody. Oh, gee, she added more distance for me, but you still make the golf ball spin and control. This is pretty cool. So now we've maxed the distance out, so we can't do that anymore. So that went from like 95 all the way up to probably the mid-2000s. So now the distance is maxed out. So now what we do is we start working on bringing back that feel. So back in the Tour Bilotto days, feel was the only thing people talked about. It spun a lot, and it feels really good. Now the feel conversations went away because the golf ball went so far. Well, now they can't go any further, so we start to bring back feel. So the level of feel and performance relative to compression and spin are the big buzzwords that go on today, because we're able to actually have technologies that can make cores be 40 and 50 compression, but be as fast as the old 90 and 100 compression cores were. So that's really the big change in technology. Back then, we weren't able to do that. So you couldn't make a 40 compression core. If you did, it was very slow. Now we can make it as fast as 100 compression cores. Keeps the golf balls fast, brings the spin rate down, brings the feel down, so you fall into this very soft, low compression, distance kind of golf ball.
For years, it was fast, harder the compression, faster the ball, lower the compression, lower the spin, and I'm simplifying things in a generic way, so to speak. But nowadays, that's not just it's not an easy way to just look at it. It's not black and white like that. With additional layers and other items, you can make a firm ball that doesn't spin a lot, and you can make a soft ball that is still as fast, correct?
That's correct, yeah. The multi-layer, adding layers to the golf ball really changed what I call the spin curve of golf. If you take your driver through your sand wedge, two-piece golf balls used to be low spin with the driver and low spin with the irons. Wound golf balls used to be high spin with the driver, but high spin with the irons. And the multi-layer balls now let us make tour golf balls spin like the old pinnacles. That's why they go further. But still, we can control the spin anywhere from the pinnacle all the way up to the Tour Bilotto. So compression is kind of a designer's tool, because I can make you a 90 compression and a 70 compression and a 50 compression ball, and I could have the same spin rate. So that's the designer's tool we use to be able to control part of the feel and part of the spin. But the multi-layer technology has really given players the distance that they used to have with the two-piece balls, with some level of performance that they had with the wound golf balls.
This has been an odd couple of years in the golf ball industry. I mean, we had a couple of years ago, we had all of a sudden the arrival of 20 different small golf ball companies saying that they were making the best golf ball or the same golf ball for less money. Then we had lawsuits. They all disappeared. Then we had Costco. That disappeared. What is different from Snell than those other places, other than just you?
Well, there's a history side to it. There's also understanding side to it. So, you know, the golf ball world is a patent minefield. So if you really just think you're going to go and say, hey, you know, a lot of companies actually will go overseas. There'll be a factory, and the factory will say, hey, we'll give you this golf ball. How many you want? And we'll give it to you dirt cheap. And that's great. You know, but now you take a risk because there's a lot of companies that spend millions of dollars that try to develop golf balls that these guys over there will just copy. And, you know, especially the aerodynamic side to it, the dimple side to it is everybody goes to this one company, they make dimple cavities, but they do no testing and they don't do any patent stuff on them. So that's kind of what happened with a lot of the independent companies a few years back. They were using the same manufacturer, having an aerodynamic pattern that kind of, you know, failed some of the testing that went into some of the patents of other companies, and then they were sued. So the benefit that I have is I've worked for 25 years designing golf balls for the tour players, pretty much all the top players in the world, and have a good understanding of what's been done and what works and what's been done in the past. So having that understanding and putting things together that stays out of that, you know, that risk part of it is kind of lets us make sure when we make a claim that the performance is outstanding, it is, but we also don't have to worry that our outstanding performance is going to be copied by 10 other companies and they're going to say the same thing.
Before we continue, I want to remind everybody that they can discuss these topics and all the topics on the THB forum with thousands of golfers every single day. And of course, you can follow, discuss, debate, and interact on social media at THB Golf on most platforms. What does the future hold? Right now, we're in golf, we've seen, I'd say if we go back 5-6 years, we've seen a consolidation. We've seen companies go away that we didn't really expect or figure would go away. We've seen growth from companies coming back. We've seen the golf ball market change. We had Bridgestone as a solid number two, and now all of a sudden, as of recently, they're fourth in the golf ball market, falling behind both Callaway and TaylorMade Golf. What is the, and I know you and I could have a conversation about market share and how incorrect the data is forever, especially as we move towards an online world. But what does the future hold for the golf ball category?
Yeah, I think both categories of club and ball are very similar where, you know, since I've been in this industry, you know, they're both about the same size. They're both about a $1.5 billion size category. And they've been that way. So what happens in the industry is people just kind of steal market share from each other. You know, how they measure it and how they report it is that question, is that debate you were mentioning. But it's a reference point, and the reference point's kind of been the same over years. So it still kind of shows that in their world that they measure and how they measure, there's been some changes at the top. And that's because they're making good products. You know, this industry right now has got a lot of talented people and a lot of good companies, and you know, a lot of them actually move from company to company. You know, as you can imagine, so you see, you're still getting that knowledge and design work. So there's a lot of good companies, and then the marketing side at that level really helps as well too. You know, TaylorMade mentioned jumped up in their bulk thing because they spent a lot of money this year on TV and other stuff that could create some visibility to the performance they have, you know, and then they move ahead of Bridgestone, which has kind of not done as much of that. So those guys are going to jockey around and they'll pass market share back and forth to each other. When there's a new launch of something that's successful, they'll move ahead. And then when it kind of dies away and someone else comes out, they could be jumped again. But I think for us, one of the big things is the online side to it is new. You know, there were a few companies in the past, but what we're seeing is that there's a lot of opportunities and a lot of different ways to get the message to people. And then the embracing side to having people, when we first started, having someone buy a golf ball online and have it shipped to their house because they needed it tomorrow, that was the worst idea ever. You know, I got to play tomorrow and I can't have them. So now we have people that actually plan, you know, and they know the shipping schedules. They know what it is. And they will get them saying, hey, we got a tournament next week. Can't wait to get them. So they, you know, they're moving a little bit towards understanding what it is because the performance and the saving is there. So I think that category will grow, you know, a little bit with the online side. And I still think you'll see the other companies kind of, you know, when their new products come out, and which are usually all pretty good, they'll jockey around for market share numbers and fight with each other on that side. We hope our growth continues on the online side to it. And we got some cool plans coming for the first of this year. And then we'll continue to grow.
One of the things that you've spoken about openly is urethane as a cover, and specifically cast urethane. And there's multiple ways to make golf balls. I've actually seen up close the chemical way to do it and the cast urethane way. Can you explain cast urethane? 'Cause we talk about it, but I have a feeling our listeners don't quite understand it, and me explaining it is not going to sound as good as you explaining it.
Cast urethane really came into golf in 1995. It was actually the first project that I really worked on at Titleist, called the Titleist Professional. It was a mound golf ball that in 95 we introduced in Japan first as Tour Prestige, and then it became the Titleist Professional after that. And the cast urethane technology, in the urethane business, there's two types. There's thermoplastic, which are called TPUs, and thermoset, which are TSUs. So there's two types. The thermosets are the cast urethanes, and the thermoplastics are the injection molding type. So a lot of companies, when we started in urethanes, they used to have to make the thermoplastic urethanes very thick. And when they got softer in feel and spin, the durability got very poor. So the cast urethane technology kind of came about where it's a liquid where two parts come together. There's a reaction that kicks off with heat, and that liquid turns to a solid in about 40 seconds. So you lower and center the core in when that material is actually starting to cure, and then it takes under heat and a little bit of pressure, it cures up to create this like almost irreversible reaction. So it's fully cross-linked, it's cured. The cross-linking in the cover actually allows the durability to be so much better. So the cast urethane, we were able to cast very thin, make it very soft, and it was very durable. Now the process is very expensive. If you make a mistake, that's all scrap, and you throw it all away, and you know it can cost you millions of dollars, as Callaway found out when they tried to get into that, you know, back in the 2000s, early 2000s. So the thermoplastic urethane, you put pellets into an injection machine, you injection mold the cover, you take it out. If you make a mistake, you reheat it and you regrind it and you use it again and you use it again. There's been big improvements on thermoplastic urethane with respect to durability. So those covers have gotten a lot better. The thermoset urethanes or the cast urethanes have continued to be the dominant cover on tour, which is what TaylorMade and Titleist and actually Snell Golf, we use the thermoset cast urethane cover today as well. So that allows us to cast the cover very, very thin. It's extremely durable, and the little soft feel you get around the green with that check spin is a big benefit to that kind of technology.
It's time for Fire Away. 10 questions. Oh, first thing that comes to your mind, which is always dangerous, nothing to do with golf. Are you ready?
Sure.
Best sandwich and from where?
Oh boy, I like the big roast beef sandwich from Jersey Mike's. Those are always every time I see one, I have to stop and get one. They always seem fresh, and they're always a tasty snack.
You were to create the perfect burger. What is on it?
Perfect burger is not. I'm not crazy with the stuff and cheese inside the burger and stuff. I'm kind of a cheeseburger or bacon cheeseburger kind of guy with lettuce, tomato, mustard and ketchup. So pretty simple.
Last movie seen in a theater?
Oh, geez, I can't even remember the last time I went to the theater. I think it was probably American Sniper, you know, when that came out.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing that in the movie was not going to happen. So watching it at home on TV, it's a pretty powerful movie.
Best toppings on a pizza?
Most of your listeners probably never going to hear this, but it's linguica. It's a kind of almost a New Bedford kind of thing back up in Massachusetts where we live. It's like a medium kind of spicy Portuguese kind of sausage, and
it's fantastic.
They grind it up, you slice it up, it's outstanding. So if you ever get a chance to get linguica pizza, I say try it.
Easier to work with, engineers or marketing people?
No, engineers by far. You know, they're the marketing people sometimes can add some fluff to some stories and stuff, but the engineers are usually pretty direct. So I'm an engineer by trade, and I'm kind of a guy that just likes to. It is what it is, and this is the truth. And I don't want to have to sit and try to figure out: are you really trying to sell me something here, or are you really telling me? You're really telling me what's going to happen when I leave? You know, and you clap your hands and say bye. You know, did I really get the truth out of you?
What is the best part of the city of Boston?
I'm a big fan of Fenway Park. You know, I love the history that goes into Fenway Park. And if you're a sports fan, you know, the old Boston Guard was cool, but that's gone. So it's been replaced with a new modern rink, which is not doesn't have that history. But Fenway Park still does. The old red chairs when you go sit in a game and they're not really comfortable, and some obstructed view seats. But it's Fenway Park, and it sits in the middle of a city that you say, how do they even fit it in here? It's a really cool place to go, and I love going there.
Favorite cocktails for both on the course and off?
I'm a Tito's kind of guy, so I like Tito's and pretty much anything, to be honest with you. If you've got Tito's, I'll find a mixer for her, and if you don't have a mixer, I could probably find a lime and drink it straight. But I'm a Tito's Diet Coke fan. Tito's Gatorade is a drink we have up here that we do. We call it a Perk 30. I think someone made it up at the golf course, but Tito's and pretty much anything.
Favorite TV show?
Favorite TV show? Boy, that's a... I'm not into all these foo-foo kind of shows that make you cry. If it's not some kind of sports on TV... Actually, you know what I like watching? I like watching Judge Judy. She's my hero. You just blew my mind.
I had a conversation how I would probably leave my wife for her.
Oh, my God. I love that lady. And I love the wit and the... I mean, just the, you know, just the thing she says. I kind of watch it almost every day, to be honest with you, because the cases are interesting, but the way she handles the people is it's comical, and it's a little bit of law, and it's actually pretty funny.
We can talk lobster rolls on THP all the time. Better served hot or cold?
Well, if you're gonna have lobster, you're better off not putting it in a roll to begin with. Have it hot. Crack it, open it yourself, peel it apart yourself. It's part of the experience, and then put it in some hot butter. But if you have to have it in a roll, I kind of like it cold with just a little bit of mayonnaise. You know, you don't dip it in the butter when it's usually cold. So in a roll, which is not my first choice, it's definitely cold. And my first choice is crack it open, get that crap all over you. You know, it's kind of part of it. If you have to put the bib on, it's acceptable. It's the only time it's acceptable to wear a bib. So crack it open, get dirty, and get in there and get after it.
You have a choice to watch one game out of two, and it's only these two, Patriots or Celtics.
That's an easy one. I'm a hockey player, so my first choice would be the Bruins.
But I know, that's why they're not listed.
It's definitely the Patriots. Well, basketball is a good sport, but I grew up playing hockey, and in basketball, if somebody hits you five times, you're out of the game. And in hockey, if someone hits you five times, you can go after them 30 seconds later. So it's a little bit different, but football kind of falls in that same category. You know, I'm a good Patriot, big Patriots fan, but I like football much better than basketball.
We want to thank Dean for coming on the show and talking to us. Don't forget, you can find all the THP Radio on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And of course, you can download the THP mobile app that features all of this, along with news, video content, and a whole lot more, available free for your iPhone or Android device. So for myself and Dean, we hope you enjoyed the show. Bye, everybody.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.